do have a quorum, so we'll bring the Mining and Outdoor Recreation Committee to order. Representative Anzel, you had a chance to review the minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Okay, members, today we are going to hear our first bill in this committee, and it's a bill brought to us by Representative Draskowski. It'll be House File 184, and the chair will move the bill, House File 184, and the bill will be referred to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance. That is the motion. Representative Draskowski, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about House File 184 today. The issue of aquatic invasive species has consumed a great deal of time over the past five legislative sessions. People in many different parts of the state are concerned about what the newly introduced species that live in a portion of Minnesota's lakes and streams means to them and their ability to continue to utilize the abundance of natural resources with which our state has been blessed. In 2012, I was a member of the House Environment Finance Committee. We heard many provisions offered in several bills that were intended to help slow the spread of these new aquatic species into lakes and streams that they had yet to inhabit. During that time frame, we saw bills with controversial provisions that required boat owners to submit themselves and their property to law enforcement inspections, to participate in newly designed boat washing efforts at many landings, and force them to travel in every instance with their boat, with the boat plug removed, or face government penalties. In addition, that year we saw the DNR push very, very hard for additional burdensome identification and training requirements that require law-abiding users of our lakes and streams to submit to yet another burdensome requirement, to participate in a training program and to submit to an associated decal placement requirement in order to continue to use the same resources that they have used responsibly for generations. While I and others fought hard to remove this last straw from the camel's back, we fell short, and the legislature succumbed to the placement of this added burden upon the fine people of Minnesota. The bill before you today repeals the unacceptable burdens of training and additional decal requirements that the legislature and governor have placed upon Minnesota outdoor enthusiasts. I have heard from many Minnesotans in every part of our state that are frustrated and angry with this new law. The general understanding is that state government has gone overboard in its burdening of the liberties of our citizens, and it's time for the legislature to reel them back in. Appreciate you giving a chance to hear this bill today, members of Mr. Chair, and I stand for questions, or maybe, Mr. Chair, you actually would like to hear from some of the testifiers.
First on the list is Mr. McElroy. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dan McElroy. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Resort and Campground Association. We represent about 340 privately owned and operated resorts and campgrounds in every corner of the state. We've done that since 1931. I personally haven't done it since 1931, but the organization has. My members have about 6,000 cabins and 10,000 campsites, and they depend on people who have confidence in the cleanliness and the safety and the sustainability of our rivers and lakes. We care deeply about the success of programs that prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species. However, this decal program is causing a tremendous amount of stress and concern for our members, but more importantly for their guests and potential guests, both from Minnesota and from surrounding states. We support Representative Draskowski's bill. We support the repeal of this provision, but we're committed to working with you and the DNR and others on programs that will be effective, but without causing the unintended economic consequences that have been caused by this piece of legislation. Let me share two stories with you. One of our members, Geiger's Trails End Resort on Bowstring Lake near Deer River, had a $12,000 multi-cabin, multi-week booking, and the people called to cancel saying, "We've been told by one of our friends in Michigan that if we come to Minnesota, we have to have a decal on our boat trailer, and if it falls off, we could be arrested and put in jail." Now, I know that's not true, and that the penalties under this bill are under the current law are a warning or potentially a fine. But that's not what resorts in Michigan and Illinois and upstate New York and other places are telling potential guests. Some of you know Joe Henry, who leads the Lake of the Woods Tourism Association out of Bedette. Joe was at the Chicago Sportsman Show 2 weeks ago and had questions from the outdoor media, from tourism officials from other states, and from resorts in other states. Is it true that you have to pass a test and have a decal on your boat trailer? And if it falls off, you get arrested if you come to Minnesota this year. And Joe said, no, it's not true. You're supposed to get a decal. You have to pass a test, but the penalty is a warning or a fine. That's not what our competitors are telling potential guests. We're also concerned about although our biggest concern is to draw people to come to enjoy Minnesota, have a grand time here, and tell 100 of their friends that they should come too. There is an issue with people who might pass through the state and travel from Wisconsin to fish in South Dakota, pull their boat through the state but never put a boat in our waters, that's not probably what the DNR intended with the language that's here. I want to applaud the DNR for taking action a few weeks ago to suspend starting this program pending giving the legislature time to take action. That is helping. We're trying to spread that word. We've had it in our publications and so have other tourism organizations. But I believe that repealing this particular provision will allow us to take on other ideas and other strategies for education and conformity, voluntary conformity, and if necessary, enforcement, without having the public relations and marketing challenge that the current provision has. That's the view of my members. Thank you for the opportunity. I'd be happy, if there are any, to take questions or comments.
Thank you, Mr. McRoy. Questions? Members, we have a number of people that want to testify today. I'd like to get through the bill and vote on the bill later on. If there's no questions, we'll just move on. Seeing no questions, we will take the next testifier. Carol Austin. I'm sorry. Did I get your name right?
Yes.
Okay. Please state your name and who you represent, just for the record, for the tape.
My name is Carol Austin. I represent the Facebook group that I started to try and repeal this law. And that's over 3,400 people that have liked the page. When I send out a post, there's over 4,000 people that will see it usually within 24 hours. When I sent the post out that the DNR postponed enforcement, there was over 10,000 people that saw it within the next 3 days. So there's a wide variety of people that are really interested in getting rid of this law. As for myself, I'm a sport fisherman. I'm the secretary treasurer of a bass club. I'm also on the Carver County Parks Commission, which we deal with the financing and paying for the inspectors to try and keep the lakes out in the Southwest Metro clean. One thing I see about this law is it try and forces education, which I've never seen really work. You know, you try and tell a 14 to 18 year old to do something, most of them aren't going to take it in. You know, you try and tell a 65 year old or 70 year old what to do, they're probably going to ignore it because they've been taking their boat to the lakes for years. As the previous speaker noted, I've heard from a lot of people that say it's going to reduce tourism. I've been trying to, as he has, go against that and let people know that, no, there is not a fine in the current law. All you have to do is take a test. You can get a 7-day permit to come to Minnesota. But the word is out there from other tourism, the state agencies, our neighbors, that say, hey, Minnesota, you have to go take this test and put a sticker on your trailer. For myself, it'd be no big deal. I'm computer literate. I'd love to see the test and take it right now, but for many of my friends and many others that have contacted me, they don't want to see it. They see it as a burden. Probably 75, I'll go back to the DNR's own data. They say 25% are in non-compliance. That means 75% of the people are in compliance. And these laws have only been around for a few short years. I'd say that's doing pretty good. If you compare that to what we have with drunken driving, you know, from Thanksgiving to New Year's, they arrested 2,500 people for drunken driving. What kind of violation rate is that? I see nothing in the law that's really going to prevent the spread. Being on the Parks Commission, we get data from the inspectors. One Friday afternoon in July, at Lake Waconia, the inspector turned away 8 boats that were all Lake Minnetonka residents that had zebra mussels on their boats. They're only jumping from Lake Minnetonka because of the no wake restriction, but they were all loaded with zebra mussels or weeds. And they're only making maybe a 5 to 10 mile drive to go on a lake that didn't have a wake restriction so they could get out and have some fun. You know, should those people have known? Or are they just playing ignorant because they can't? You know, they're playing a game where on that lake, they got caught. They got stopped and turned around. They may have went to one of the private landings and got on the lake, but we don't have that data. And then this past fall, they found Christmas Lake. The lake was, probably had the most restrictions of any lake in the state, and they still got in there. Is a sticker going to stop the zebra mussels? Or maybe the fogger mussels or whatever comes next? I don't see that coming. You know, people ignore it in Christmas Lake. Some people say they got in there this spring. Others have told me that they've probably been in there for 2 years. But we don't know that. This law isn't going to stop them. I'd like to see it repealed, and I'd like to work with the DNR and others to come up with something that will really get people following the clean, drain, and dry your watercraft. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's what we would all like to see. Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions of this?
Anybody have any questions?
Seeing none, we'll move on. Thank you very much for coming in. Next, Bill Eno. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
My name is Bill Eno.
Please have a chair and just use the microphone.
My name is Bill Eno, and I'm from Twin Pines Resort on Mille Lacs Lake.
Very good. Please proceed.
A lot of what has been said already is true, and I don't want to repeat anything, but in my special part of the state, my area has had a black cloud over it for such a long time, dealing with other issues, political issues up in that area. And one more restriction to get out there and be misunderstood by people, overreactions. I've talked to people, my acquaintances before I came down here, just letting them know why I was coming down, and they were unaware of it. I mean, that's the general public, people that live around the lake. I just think that it's a fruitless motion, and I really don't think it's going to net the results. And I think that the consequences against sportsmen and tourists and the ability for people to enjoy their vacations and time on the lakes, I think is going to be hampered. And I think it's very confusing for people. And that's really all I have to say. From my area, we don't need one more straw to break our back up there.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Representative Enzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're all concerned about all of the lakes, Mille Lacs being certainly at the forefront for many of us. But do you have any suggestions? All too often, and by the way, I see a lot of merit in Representative Draskowski's legislation here, but a number of measures have to be adopted that work. So far, those measures have been elusive, and we haven't been able to figure out what works. But I'm just interested if you have any ideas about what you would do if you were king of Minnesota's lakes for a day.
Okay. Mr. Eno.
Well, I think the educational, you know, what they've been doing right now, every landing has rules and regulations about invasive species. As far as, I would get away from this demanding classes and decals, because I don't see that that's going to have any merit. Many of these invasive species are, they go from lake to lake, from ducks, seagulls. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff, and they're not going to take the test. And as far as me having a grand plan, I probably don't have one. I'm not prepared today, but I think that we need to slow down before we start trying to criminalize, so to speak, everyday sportsmen who have a lot of respect for their sports and their lakes.
Thank you, and Representative Anzella, if I could interject a little bit about what this is all about, and I agree with you. And I want the DNR, when they come up, and they're probably going to be up at the end before we take any motion or action on the bill. But I'm concerned that we're not doing enough in that regard, and I think that's kind of why this issue came forward. But I want to see something more, too. But this is not the right way to do it. And this bill was first introduced in 2011. The DNR got it wrong. They admitted it themselves. They came back in 2012, said this is the fix to our 2011 mistake. So they're pushing this forward. This passed. They put an effective date of July of 2015. This is 2012 now, July of 2015, to implement this. So they've had since 2012 to July of 2015 to see if there was going to be any problems or discuss what those problems are. And they did nothing until now. We're in the legislature, and now we're going to adjourn and go home, and this thing will be law. So that's why we're here now, to fix this thing. And I've talked to Representative Dill about this. I've talked to a number of folks. Let's get rid of this thing. Let's get rid of it and bring something else forward that will work. And that's why we're here today. And I hope that's where you agree to, Mr. Eno.
Yes, I do agree with that. Let's just stop this right now and
work on something else that's going to work.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Eno, we're going to have a hearing that you'll be interested in again next Tuesday. I'm sorry to bring you back down, but you may want to bring your neighbors next week.
It's a great drive.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we're going to have Jeff Forster. Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff. We've got one more. Roger Gesha. I'm sorry. I missed one. Sorry, Roger. Good thing we've got Stephanie here to keep me on track.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the panel.
Please state your name and who you represent.
I'm Roger Gesha. I'm representing the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance. We've talked about this a lot, and a couple of the things that I was going to talk about have been done by Dan and everybody, but out-of-state boaters and so on. And so maybe rather than go over this again, let's talk about maybe what Representative Anzell said. What could be a solution? I think we need to do something. I think all of us realize that. Testing, I don't believe, is the way to do it. Perhaps we could come up, and I throw this out for you to maybe take a spin off of it, perhaps a little brochure, three-panel brochure, which would incorporate some of the things that are on the DNR's website now that perhaps they testify, I mean, that you're going to test on. They could put this in a brochure and perhaps even go back to 2-3 years, where some guys have, and people, I should say, have registered their boats before, send them out one of these brochures and tell them that, you know, it's mandatory reading, and you must keep it in your glove box so that if you get stopped, you have it in there, and we know that you've had it, and if it's in your glove box, you're probably going to read it. You have to do this with your insurance if you get stopped by patrolman. You have to have your insurance in there, your registration. So perhaps this is a way we get started. It's a start. It's not necessarily a total fix, But what we're doing now, I believe it has to go. A couple weeks ago at an informal gathering that we sponsored, I was talking, there was a few of us, and we were talking to a senator. And he said, you know, we were talking about this, and he said, we had to do something a couple years ago. And he said, we got it wrong. He said, we got it wrong. Now we got to undo it and fix it. So that's what we're sitting here about. And perhaps that little brochure or something there like that could be sent out to everybody, not just when they renew, but go back to those people that renewed a couple years ago or just renewed last year where they won't get another one for a couple years, send it to everybody. It's going to be a cost, but I think a far less cost than what we were going to go through with the testing. And it'll probably just be as much effective as the other way. So I think that's pretty much what the last part of what I wanted to say, and everybody said the first part. I think it's got to go.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Metzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can actually wait till the end.
Okay.
We'll do that.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Roger. Thank you for coming forward. Jeff Forrester, Executive Director of Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Associates, please come forward and give your testimony. And for the tape, please state your name and who you represent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Forrester. I'm Executive Director of Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates. We have cabin owners, lake homeowners, over 100 lake associations and COLAs, so we're representing tens of thousands of people across the state. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to testify on this bill, and while we recognize that there are problems with the concept in its current form, we would urge the legislature to correct the problems rather than repeal the measure outright. The biggest reason I do not think it wise to repeal this law is that it is needed. It is not a solution in search of a problem. Last week, in articles across the state, Deputy DNR Commissioner Bob Meyer was quoted as saying that conservation officer data showed a 25% violation rate for trailered watercraft last year. We've had an education or communication program in the state for AIS since 1994, and we're still at a 25% violation rate. That's one out of four boats is in violation of the law. The gentle reminders to do the right thing, to be informed about the law, to appreciate our responsibilities to our public waters, the billboards, the Sea Grant flyers and brochures that I myself have passed out at trade show booths, the PSAs, all of these have borne little fruit. Despite over 20 years of communication, one out of four trailered watercraft or water-related equipment on Minnesota's highways is in violation of the law. Minnesota must move from communication where a message is put forth to real education, where the message is received and results in a change of behavior. I also spent a lot of time reading the newspaper stories about this bill, the comment sections on some of these stories, and the discussion on social media. And even today at this hearing, I've heard misstated facts about AIS, how it's spread, what the rules are. In the very same provision that bill that contained the provision Representative Drazkowski bill seeks to repeal was a provision to increase the fines for transporting AAS to $500, which was double what they were the previous year. If citations had actually been issued from day one rather than warnings, education may well have taken place and noncompliance would be much lower than it is today. Nothing educates quite like a citation. Then we would have an actual argument for outright repealing this language before it even goes into effect, and I would join the chorus of repealers. That did not occur. Some people oppose this law, saying it is inconvenient, it takes too much time, it's overbearing. I serve on the DNR's Aquatic Invasive Species Advisory Committee. As part of that work, we received an early draft of the online course and test. It is all good information, useful and concise. The DNR hired an outside firm to write the educational materials and manage the online and written tests for people that do not have a computer. I brought a draft of the test with me. And with your permission, I could pass it out to members of the committee and you could see it. It's 10 questions. I'll let you judge if the inconvenience of learning this material and taking this test outweighs the good it might do in protecting Minnesota's lakes and rivers from zebra mussel, spiny water flea, hydrilla, milfoil. There has been criticism of the requirement to have out-of-state boaters just passing through being required to purchase a sticker. This can be solved by requiring the sticker only at launch. From a practical standpoint, it is likely that this measure will be enforced at landings anyway by current AIS inspectors and conservation officers, not out on the roads. Other states have far stricter AIS requirements and much steeper fines than Minnesota. I pity the boater who trailers an infested watercraft through Minnesota headed west and arrives at the Idaho border, where the fines are $10,000. Or California, where the boat may well be quarantined. AIS are a new threat and are giving rise to a new reality. Boaters must make an effort to be aware of the AIS laws in the states or Canada into which they travel. We understand some of the concerns expressed and believe that some sensible modifications can be made to improve upon the provision. The current enforcement data clearly indicates we need to do a much better job educating our boating public about what they must do in order to protect Minnesota's water resources and water-related economy for current and future generations. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Representative Dill.
Thank you. Ms. Forrester, during the promulgation of all the systems since the legislation was passed in 12, I think Representative Hackbar said, was your organization asked to come in and give suggestions on how the functionality of the program would work?
No,
Mr. Forrester. Representative Dill?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very Thank much.
You. Curtis Hansen. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Curt Hansen, resident and hopefully speaking for other residents.
Okay. And anyone else in the audience, as we get through the rest of the testimony after the DNR and before we vote on the bill, other folks will have an opportunity to come forward as well. Please proceed.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of new at this, and I got a couple of points I'd like to point out.
Sure, just state what's on your mind.
I told my uncle about this. He's 80, 83 years old. Told him about this last November. And, well, he got freaked out. He got scared. He says, well, why do we have to do this? You know, I've lived in this state all my life. And he goes, I don't have a computer. I don't know. I'm illiterate when it comes to this. You know, what am I supposed to do? Do I go to the DNR office? I go, you can't go to the DNR office. You've got to buy a pamphlet for extra money to learn about this test and take this test. So he has to pay more money for the person that does it online. Now, is that fair? I mean, the poor guy is 83 years old, and he has a cabin up in the Sand Lake up by Quinbogash up there. Been up there for 60 years, family cabin. And now, you know, now he's confused about, I guess there's rules that the you can have your hunting boat, you can transfer your hunting boat without a sticker, but you have to have this and that, and he's confused. This law is just confusing, and it's overburdensome. Another point, we already have another $5 fee on our fishing license here for AIS. Now, we put another $5 onto our boat license, you know, I'm already paying $40 for my license, that's another $5. And another thing, I can go on and on and on, but, you know, when you ask for suggestions, I got all giddy, just giddy. I got a great suggestion. I think it's DNR. I think the DNR has a booklet out there for boarding guide. Page 21, there's maybe a page and a half, page and a half of talk about AIS. Before that, before that, there's a little tippet about a toilet use on a boat. You know, what's more important? You know, the DNR has a little tippet about talking to AIS. All right, let's have the DNR, you know, person before me talk about a brochure. Well, let's update the boating guide. and put the boating guide with the trailer license thing, and having all the boating guide have like a two-in-one booklet. One booklet would be a different color than the other book. The first booklet would be AIS. Just, you know, doing all the disclosure of AIS that you get from when you buy your fishing license. You have all that information on there and all that. So it'd be a different color separate from the others. But the boating guide would discuss all the other safety tips and whatever thing. And have it mandatory that the person has to read this and has to know that you understand all the responsibilities that the boat owner has. And I think that's a great idea. And I also, maybe when you have the license, get your license, make a suggestion saying that, yes, I am responsible for reading this literature, so I know all about the information. Now, another point I want to get to is this law goes after one sector of the society. And this should be a full state. Everybody in the state should be involved in this. And I just don't think it's right for us being singled out. I mean, right now we got $10 million for the counties $10 million to be allocated to counties. I think you all know this, where everybody gets a certain share, and the counties are supposed to do something with that for education, IIS. So we get that. We got the $5 fee for. I want to thank you very much for for you guys taking up this bill and looking at this, and thank you for listening.
Okay. We do have a question, Representative Anzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually very pleased that a real resident, a real citizen, came to get engaged in this issue. And I'm also very happy about the elderly gentleman who has the place on Sand Lake by Winnie, because that's a very special place. Because it's by me. Yeah. At the end of the day, any alternative to existing law is going to have to be balanced between education and enforcement. I sense very little appetite for a simple enforcement solution, and many of us, especially those of us who actually get out on all those lakes in the top third of the state when we get out of here in the spring, see violations all the time. And that's unacceptable. It just is unacceptable. And at the risk of alienating a lot of people, you know, we have a program called Turn In Poachers. And pretty darn effective over time. And it gets more effective all the time. And anglers and hunters and other outdoor enthusiasts who gain confidence in observing and watching the activities of others and reporting to CEOs is growing. The net effect of that is a better environment and a better hunting and fishing experience for everybody. Do you see any similar kind of an effort whereby everyday average hunters and fishermen and boaters and others in the sporting public with some kind of a registration or certification that allows them the opportunity to report alleged violations? Do you think that would have any merit at all?
I think it would have merit. But how do you design something like that?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. I guess maybe just have the tip line that, like they have, and say, well, so they can, I guess, that'd be kind of burdensome for our enforcement officers to track down someone and, you know, wasting a lot of their time, because they've got a lot of important work too.
Mr. Chairman, my concern is we can produce brochures and educational materials, and that does not guarantee anything. Somebody mentioned their insurance policy. I got a bunch of insurance policies. I've never read a sentence, I don't think. So somewhere in there is a balance.
Thank you, Representative Enzo. Thank you, Mr. Hanson. Thank you for coming forward.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank
you. Members, we're going to have the DNR come down. I think that's we're going to generate a number of different questions from the DNR. But before DNR, you can come forward. I'd just like to mention before we proceed with the DNR, in our packet, there's some written testimony by the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District that you might want to take a look at. Also, members, from our committee hearing last week, Twin Metals had a number of different questions. Representative Urusso, some of your questions are being answered on this letter that's in your packets. So, members, please take a look at that. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Meyer, and I think some of the things that we're going to want to know are a little bit of history to start with about where this came from, whether it was the DNR that brought it forward. I think that there were some groups that originally brought it forward, or a group, and you guys kind of took the ball with it and ran with it, but you can tell us how that all came about. I think there's a number of issues we want to touch on as far as the fee is concerned, what our obligation is on what's been done to this point. I think you probably know the questions that we might have, and hopefully you can answer all those in your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and thank you. First of all, I would just like to correct a couple things. There's not a $5 fee on your fishing license. You pay a $5 aquatic invasive species surcharge on your boat registration, which is for 3 years. So you're paying $5 for a three-year period for AIS activities to the department.
So that's taking place right now. We're already paying on our boat licenses, on our registrations, $5 of that fee goes to AIS right now and creates the AIS account.
Aquatic Invasive Species Surcharge, yes.
Correct.
There is also a portion of each non-resident fishing license that goes to the Aquatic Invasive Species account as well. And I think there's a couple other funding mechanisms that are out there that fund aquatic invasive species activities. Trying to think. We also do a substantial amount of education within the fishing regulations, and I'm thinking I've probably missed an opportunity to provide you all with copies of our hunting and fishing and snowmobiling and all of our other regulation books, which I will be bringing over to committee here for you my next visit, so you can see all of the activities that we provide to people who are customers who are using our resources, and they can be aware of the rules and regulations. So the previous testifier talked about the boarding regulations. The boarding regulations focus on red light, green light, starboard, all of the boarding requirements, safety jackets, docking. There is a small piece about AIS, but a large amount of our education is through the fishing regulations, and we also have numerous other educational materials on our website that we distribute on aquatic invasive species, which I will bring you examples of in the future. This program originated, well, first of all, we've been talking about aquatic invasive species for quite some time. Many conversations have occurred over the past 6 years or so at the legislature. 2010, there was discussion about putting a decal on your boat like we require on jet skis right now that talk about safety. For those of you who aren't aware, when jet skis were first coming out, there was a substantial debate within the legislature about noise and where they're to be used and how they're to be operated and who is to operate them. One of the things the legislature passed, I would assume within DNR support, I was not at the DNR at that time, was to require a sticker on the jet ski itself that talked about operation. Working with stakeholders in the legislature, we passed a law, I believe it was in 2011, as the chair referred to, that would require this sticker to be on the boat. The previous session after that, we changed that to require this test and decal for related to water-related equipment. We also passed a provision that same session, I believe, that required lake service providers, which is anybody who are making money off of putting in docks, boat lifts, lawn irrigation systems, moving pontoons from one body or to another, renting boats, things like that, required them to take an online training class and become certified. That process was very well received. It educated a lot of people, as what we saw that year was the two infestations that occurred in the Alexandria area were caused by people who had bought boat lifts from people who lived on other lakes and put them on their lakes without properly inspecting them or decontaminating them. So those provisions are in place today and are currently up and running.
Well, Commissioner Meyer, where did the idea come from? Where did the concept come from? Did it originate with the DNR, or was it some groups that came forward with it?
Mr. Chairman, it was the groups and the DNR in consultation trying to respond to the repeal of the 2011 sticker that was there to come up with a new idea.
Where did the 2011 idea come from? Was that from a group too, or from the same group?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it was the DNR in concert with the stakeholder providers, AIS stakeholders, which are, you've heard from several of them, but they're also a lot of different people who were out there working on the issues at the time. So we worked with the stakeholders and the legislature that 2012 to come up with this provision. There was also increased penalties, and it gave the DNR the authority to actually inspect boats. Previous to that, we could not board a boat or look in your live well because of a judicial a judge ruling that focused on inspecting fishing houses at the time, and would cover it, went into boats as well. So we now have the authority to inspect your live well, make sure that it is empty, make sure your bolt plug is out, make sure that you aren't transporting water from one body to another. So the discussion that 2012 session, I believe Representative Ward was the House author, and Representative McNamara was working with us along with other members in committee, was to try to figure out how do we resolve this, and it was to come up with an online sticker or online education program. At the end of it would be a sticker placed on the boat that would be post-dated, so to speak, made effective in 2015 to take place. And that came and went, was passed into law. 13 and 14 went by. We were working on the provision, and now here we are, 2015. We started educating people this past summer and fall through our normal course of contacts at boat shows. The state fair, I think, is where we first rolled it out, and a number of people were caught off guard by that. I think the people forgot about it or just never heard about it back in 2012. And that kind of leads us to where we are today. I'm sure you're all aware, and it was brought up, that we have postponed the effective date of the training. We are going to turn the training on the website. Would have been January 31st to give people ample time to get the education. But at the encouragement and understanding of interest with the legislature, we decided to postpone that day. So that's where we are today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. And one question that I have is, if we repeal this law, what's the fiscal obligation that we have to anything that we've done up to this point? Could you let us know what that is?
Mr. Chairman, members, I believe with the fiscal note that the committee has on House File 184, it outlines a fiscal impact of $320,000 that would be due to the vendor that we are under contract with to develop this system. Now, we are in conversation with that vendor and are identifying the cost at a per hourly rate and what those costs actually are. We need to continue those conversations and develop them. To date, what we have for the work that has taken place up until we put it on hold in the middle of January, beginning of January, is approximately $236,000, $235,600 for the development costs. Now, there are other costs that we're in discussion with the vendor, dealing with the call center that they've developed, dealing with decal development, dealing with some of those other pieces, office space, small office spaces rented out. This vendor is in Minnesota. He's located in the Stillwater area, so it's a local vendor that we've been working with. I don't have a good handle on those numbers right now. We're working to refine what these costs are and what those implications would be.
Can you tell me, Commissioner Meyer, how the vendor was going to recoup these costs should we not repeal this bill?
Mr. Chairman, members, at the time we were discussing this issue, and it was represented in the fiscal note, and similar to our other programs, we were doing a contract with the vendor. It was a kind of a design-build contract, so to speak, where the vendor would take on that risk of setting up the system and getting it running, and our discussions with them would be a $5 fee that the vendor would charge to the individual for his work that he's done in the system and to get the sticker to him, the decal.
Well, Commissioner Meyer, then how would he collect the fee? Is it a pass-through? The DNR collects the fee and then pays them, or is it direct to them? Or what gives them the authority to collect that fee?
Mr. Chairman, members, we were working with assumptions that I'm still trying to verify if we had the actual authority for the vendor to do that. But similar to our online hunting firearm or hunting education program, and also the boater education program and some other, well, our state park reservation system, where our customers pay directly to this vendor for the services that they render. Our online hunter safety education program, which is a detailed platform, if you want to call it, customized to the state of Minnesota and our laws and our training requirements, has been developed by a separate vendor, very similar to this situation, that is approved by the International Hunter Education Association, so a person can go online and take the classes, and that fee, which is outlined in statute, is $24.95 that they pay to the vendor versus going to a class for 6 to 8 classroom periods for 3 or 4 weeks. So if you look at the cost associated with travel and people's time, a lot of people decide to go to the online program there. We are still trying to confirm whether we had the explicit authority, but it was our intention in our discussions with the legislature at that time that is what we were going to provide.
So I've got a couple of questions, Commissioner Meyer. First of all, before I get to my one question I really want to get to, so the vendor was going to recoup his cost by charging $5 per client that called in to take the test. And there was no fee then that was going to go to the DNR or to the AIS account. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay, so we weren't collecting any money that was going to go to the AIS account, which I think a lot of people thought that some of that money was going to go to the AIS account and to the DNR. And then, Mr. Meyer, am I to understand that these other programs that you're talking about, the legislature gave the authority to collect that fee to those vendors or to the DNR to enter into a contract, but this particular legislation did not have or give that authority?
Mr. Chairman, there are specific citations related to the Hunter Safety Education Program where we can charge a fee, also what that fee is.
But Commissioner Meyer, but there is legislation where, or statute, that the legislature gave to the DNR to collect those fees. And in this case, that didn't happen?
Mr. Chairman, I believe you are correct.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Constantine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I can steal Representative Anzell's line. If you were king for the day, how do we stop this problem? What is it going to take to bring aquatic invasive species to heal?
Mr. Chairman, that is a great question, one that we wrestle with every day. I just need to correct one other thing that brought that up, is the 25% violation rate. I was misquoted on that several weeks ago. The violation rate that we saw last year was actually 17%. So I just want to get that on the record, Mr. Chairman, that it's 17% violation rate we saw, for people not having their boat plugs out, having water in their boats, having minnow water within their minnow buckets that they haven't changed out, things of that nature, having aquatic plants and things on their boats. Education, and to the representative's question then, education is a huge component of it, right? It's how do we stop people from transporting water or these media, if we want to call it, that are transporting the aquatic invasive species. I think Mr. Forrester brought up some issues that other states have done that are very, very strict. We don't want to be in the business of confiscating boats, making people into felons or criminals. We want to make sure people understand the laws and are abiding by them, right? That's, if I was king for a day, that's what I would want. I think education has to be a strong component of that. The program that we have, that we've outlined with the Lake Service Provider Training, works. I think this would work as well. I understand the concerns people have about not having computers, not being able to get the sticker. I mean, we need to deal with all of those things. I think if I was king for the day, I would like to try to resolve the issues with the program, figure out how can we implement a program that does educate people and does allow us to identify people who have been educated and get the other people educated on the laws and make sure that they understand them, and spend a lot of time, like we are right now, working on research to try to eradicate the invasive species as well.
Well, thank you for that, Commissioner Meyer. There's a number of issues, and I'd like to bring up some of those issues. If I'm not thinking of all of them, please speak up, members. But it's the issues that you mentioned, Commissioner Meyer, but there's also somebody mentioned the issue of people traveling through the state not having the sticker on their trailer. Commissioner Meyer, what about me, for example? I own a boat and I own a trailer, and my kids use my boat and trailer. And I have to take the course and get the sticker, and I put the sticker on the trailer. What about my kids? They don't own a boat or a trailer. What do you do for them? They're not taking the course. I mean, that's another issue. There's a number of different issues, and the deeper and deeper we get into this issue, this law is not working. Commissioner, also, you mentioned that there would be a $5 fee that was going to be allowed for this vendor to collect. How many people do we anticipate are going to have to take this course? I mean, do we go by the number of boat registrations? Is that what we're talking about? Or what's the estimated amount of people that would have to take this online course?
Mr. Chairman, if you just looked at registered boats, I believe there's approximately 450,000 registered boaters within the state of Minnesota. Now, how many of those are actually trailered? I mean, we probably estimate about 200,000 people. It's hard to really estimate if you look at people in Representative Anderson's district. They have boats that don't go anywhere, right? They're on the lakes. They're on Gull Lake. They're sitting there all the time. A lot of people don't even own trailers. So getting our arms around that number, I would say roughly 200,000 or so. It's hard to really exactly say what that is and what the outstate impact would be. There was also an exemption for a 21-day, I believe, temporary permit for the out-of-state voters as well that they would have been able to get. So,
Representative Metzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, does the state list the lakes that are contaminated with AIS on the launches? And what I mean by that is, when we're talking about all the directions that are up there for the rules and regulations, does it say this lake's contaminated, please make sure to empty your boat if you're going somewhere else on there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Metzen, well, everybody, it's the law, you have to clean, drain, and dry your boat, or drain your boat, no matter what water body you're going to, and you have to have your plug out until you're launching your boat again, so it doesn't matter if it's infested or not. All lakes that are listed as infested do have signage on them. I was just on one over the weekend ice fishing that has milfoil, so we have milfoil signs on there. Luckily, there's no zebra mussels, but they are clearly posted. Whether people are looking at those signs or not is another issue, but all of the lakes are posted. If you look at our regulations, a large part of our fishing manual or fishing regulations is a list of infested water bodies. A lot of them are Eurasian milfoil, but a lot of them have zebra mussels as well. So we do have that, and I was just looking, if you haven't seen our Lake Finder app, we have an application on our website that is a Lake Finder. I believe if you put that Lake Pokegama or whatever you want to go to, you put that name in there, it comes up with not only the infestations and what it is, but also the slot limits, the fishing, if it's been stocked recently, if it's an impaired water by the Pollution Control Agency. So we're trying to get all this information out to people. But yes, postings at boat landings is one of the tools that we have. We try to keep those up to date as much as possible.
Representative Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess one quick follow-up, not really looking for a big answer on it, but, you know, I think it's fine, Dandy, we're trying to do this digital. We have an app that we can use and all this stuff, but I think if I were to have gone and ran in my district, assuming that everyone would check to see who I am and what I'm about as a candidate, an app would have missed about 65% of the people in my district. My point being that, you know, we have an elderly population up north, a lot of folks who own the boats and trailers. Our parents and grandparents, I know I'd be in a similar situation to the chair. Had to sell my boat, actually, when I decided to run for this seat to my dad. And, yeah, it is kind of sad, isn't it? But, no, point being, like, we need to get real with how we're approaching this and find a better way, and I'm sure that throughout the course here and discussion we have moving on that we can do that. So,
okay, members, we do have a list going, so I'm not ignoring those that want to speak. Representative Lewick, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question that was raised by a constituent on the website, and we'll just comment that we don't have great broadband coverage in a lot of parts where I live, and we got a whole other program going on here in the legislature to try to solve that. So the assumption that everybody's got a quick access to a computer, at least in the northern part of the state, is not a very accurate assumption, whether you're young or old. But the question I had, they pointed out that there's a sentence up there on that website that says, for this initial year, those who do not display the decal will be issued a warning. And my question is, it appears to be this long evolutionary process that got us here today. Is there more anticipated in this original program that we're going to develop a rule or something then to start fining or charging people with something other than a warning? That sentence seems to certainly imply that up on the website, that the warning is just the beginning.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that was posted erroneously a while ago. I thought that was taken care of, but if not, it will be as soon as possible.
Okay, Representative
Thank
Johnson.
You.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, a couple of the concerns that I had were brought up. We have a lot of people that have boats, and a lot of those people don't have trailers. They wouldn't even have to take this course online to move their boat. A lot of canoes are trailered on the top of their car roofs. A lot of John boats are in the back of the pickup box. These people are moving their boats from lake to lake to lake, from body of water to body of water, but they would not be required to take this course. That brings up the other issue that I have, is being able to take the course. We just got done in the mining and outdoor recreation, or no, correction, it's the Greater Minnesota Workforce and Economic Development. We just learned that 63% of Greater Minnesota has no broadband capabilities. I think it's great that you're doing these courses online for these people, but we have a large part of Minnesota that does not have access to that. Even to look at your website or to take the course. And even in the bill that we're talking about today, for those people, they have to pay extra in order to follow the law because they don't have access to it, where all your educational stuff is being online and not getting where it needs to be because we have so many people that aren't capable. And it's not just that only 63% of Greater Minnesota is capable of reaching the broadband. But how many of those are older people that don't even have computers? They don't have access to it because my parents had internet for a while at their house, but they could not figure out how to operate it because they are not computer illiterate and it's hard for them to learn. Yet I have other areas in my district, but just over 50 miles away from here, that they do not even have internet available at their residence in their township. So it's an issue of we have to figure out what to do, but also for the education, we have to do the education, but we just can't key on the internet side of the education. We have to do more than just the internet. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor, good to see you. You mentioned a really nice lake, Gull Lake. There's several private people up there on Gull Lake that have 20, 30 private trailers. Under this current statute, would that mean that they would have to take a test once and then receive up to 30 stickers for trailers?
Mr. Chairman, I believe those folks would be covered under the Lake Service Provider training. So I need to get look at that and get back to you. Those people, they should be, hopefully, registered and receive the training as a Lake Service Provider, since they are doing that for business, I'm assuming. So,
no, Mr. Chair, no, sir. These are private individuals that own a lot of trailers.
That they aren't renting out or making money off.
No, private.
There's a provision in the current law that would allow them to get multiple decals for that, but they would have to pay for those at this point in time.
Okay.
They'd have to take the training once, and you could get multiple decals.
Well, Commissioner, they'd have to pay $5 for each decal and only take the test once? I mean, clarify that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I believe the current structure would be $2 for each additional decal to cover mailing and the cost of the production of the decal.
That's in the current statute?
No, that was what our assumption was going to be, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, okay. Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Chair, I also noticed that in the statute it doesn't cover seaplanes, either private or commercial, nor does it cover the water bombers that are used especially up north. That's not covered. Do you see any proposal in the future under current statute that that even the seaplane and watercraft or aircraft should be required to have a sticker?
Mr. Chairman, that has been discussed by some folks. We work with those people, those groups, to make sure that they understand and are educated about the aquatic invasive species laws, but currently they are not required to.
Representative Anderson?
One follow-up, Mr. Chair. Sure. And it just kind of piggybacks on all these hypotheticals as long as we were talking about, well, what was the term used? King for a day. If you were king for a day and you could do 100% quarantine on every single Minnesota lake for the next 10 years, could the DNR guarantee that there would be no spread of any AIS?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't think we can guarantee there will be no spread of AIS right now. Our discussions are not, we talk about stopping it, but realistically it's how do we slow it until we can come up with a cure for it, right? Mm-hmm. And there are people who want that, who want to stop the bass fishermen, the people who don't have the opportunity to use Lakeshore or own Lakeshore from entering into their lake, right? There's a Red Lake, Green Lake proposal that would require you to have your boat decontaminated. If you were on Lake Mille Lacs, you would have to go to a boat wash and pay somebody $20 to wash your boat and put a different sticker on there so you could go to another lake. These are all issues that people would like to see discussed. Lake Tahoe, you have to have a metal clamp and have your boat decontaminated before you go into that lake again. So you have to go to a bait shop, a car wash, have them clean, drain, dry your boat, stamp a clamp on the eye bolt in the trailer before you can go into those waters again. The department cannot support those types of things. We are here to provide access to people to enjoy the public waters of the state of Minnesota. We need to figure out how to do that to prevent and to slow the spread until we can come up with a cure. So those are major concerns we have. I mean, could you imagine if people couldn't come up there because the lake was closed off to only people who lived around the lake or had access to the lake? That's just not what Minnesota's about, right? We're the land of 10,000 lakes that people like to go fishing. So,
Representative Anderson. Members, we've got a couple more people on the list to speak and might have questions, but we do have an amendment on the bill, and we want to get to that within the next 5 minutes or so. So next on the list is Representative Hertas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess a lot of what I had to say has maybe been covered already. We all care about our lakes, But it was interesting that you just referenced the dichotomy of what some of this debate is about in using the term their lake. Riparian owners tend to look at the lake as their lake, but yet the lakes are a public resource that belong to everybody in Minnesota. So at least in the metro here, I've certainly gotten a lot of feedback from folks who are riparian owners that have a great deal of angst about every person who comes and uses their lake for the weekend. I agree with you that we're not going to stop this. The only thing we can do is slow it. And in the end, we need to be working on education to slow it and also on research to be able to treat those areas that do become infested and that we actually have a cure. In many respects, this is much like the concerns we have right now with a pandemic infection of measles. Those who have had their MMR vaccination are the equivalent of the ones who are educated and have a sticker on their boat. The ones that don't tend to spread the infection. And as Representative Anderson had mentioned, you know, the ballasts in amphibious watercraft, airplanes flying from lake to lake, I don't think they have a good way of stopping to empty their ballast before they enter the next water body. I think they're kind of stuck with a dilemma there. Those of us who have had the privilege of being a passenger on those planes and going there know that a lot of cargo sometimes is stowed away in the pontoons, and they're usually full of water after a period of time. So the water gets moved from body to body and things like that. I also think about duck hunters and decoys that somehow miraculously seem to get a hole in them and fill up with water, and they're moved from body to body. It's pretty common on a hunting weekend to move where the ducks are. If you're really a waterfowler, you kind of follow the ducks. You don't necessarily go to the same place. You might hang out for a while. If it's not happening, you'll go somewhere else. And then anything that's jet-propelled that has a pump, the pumps inside jet skis and whatnot hold water just like any other ballast on a boat or a live well. There's no way to really totally get that out of the system. Anybody who owns a Whirlpool bath knows that there's always old water in the pump when you turn it on, even though you fill it up with fresh water. And that's always evidenced by what comes out when you turn it on. So, you know, I think it's a real problem. And so to that end, I think that this is real onerous. I'm one of those individuals that he mentioned. I've got, I don't know, five or six boats, maybe four trailers. I leave boats at some of the locations where I own riparian property, and sometimes I move it around. So, you know, it's great if it stays there, but it just doesn't really solve the problem, and I think it's unsolvable at this point. So I think it needs to be focused on education and treatment.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. Commissioner Meyer, you mentioned that the $2 fee for extra trailers. How does that work? I know that if you take the online course, you pay $5, they mail you a sticker if you take the course, pass the course. That brings up another issue. Who's making the stickers? Who paid for the stickers? If is it the vendor that's sending out the stickers? Does he buy the stickers and then mail them out? Is that all included in that $5? How would all of that work? I mean, or is it the DNR that mails out the stickers? Does the vendor then notify the DNR, this person took the course, and please mail them a sticker? How would that have all worked? Is the cost of producing the sticker absorbed by the AIS account? How would that have all worked?
Mr. Chairman, might have to bring up our additional staff to answer some of those questions, but my understanding, the vendor was paying for all of those activities. The $5 covered the production of the stickers, the mailing, all of those pieces. The $2 piece, how do you verify that a person has 18 trailers or so they don't go sell them on eBay or whatever? I mean, those are things that we're working with the vendor to identify. One of the problems you have is with, and this is it's very convenient now, but it also presents a lot of logistical issues, with the lifetime registrations on trailers. So you put a little sticker on your boat trailer, on your snowmobile trailers, whatever it is, under a certain gross vehicle weight. A lot of those things aren't getting transferred. So there's a lot of different issues involved with that, but that's one thing that we were working with the vendor to make sure we had a secure system to do, but that is a good question that you bring up. So all of those responsibilities would have been placed on the vendor as well, Mr. Chair, thus a reason for his cause.
There. Well, and that is why I think a lot of people are very concerned about leaving this legislative session without these questions being answered, because those are things that everybody's worrying about, or at least legislators are concerned about these issues that weren't handled when we actually passed the law back in 2012. Representative Dill, to this point.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the individual with the 20, 30, 10, are those stickers then going to be memorialized to that person who took the test? Is it going to say their number on them? Is there going to be an ID number on those so that when the conservation officer checks that? Let me give you an example. Well, I wouldn't use Representative Anzels and I as this driving this, but let's say that someone went online and got the test and ordered 30 stickers. First off, they don't have to have any, the way I hear it, they don't have to have any justification they even need 30 stickers. But then they go to the local establishment and say, how many have taken the test, and out go the stickers, and on go the trailer, and we just defeated the program. Now, I'm not saying anyone would do that, but there's people out there that think that way. Certainly not Representative Anzels or I or the chairman, but nonetheless. How is that going to be happening? My other part of that question was, is if there's 200,000 a year or whatever the number is that vendor going to continue to collect the $5 and make a profit year after year after year after year on this? There's just a multitude of questions, but specifically to the 20 or 30 or 10 or 5 permits that get issued, the extra ones for the $2. That's my question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, you'd have to provide some type of ownership. I can get back to you on what that actual documentation would be at this point in time, but there would have to be some kind of verification that you do own those trailers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there aren't all trailers even required. I'm thinking now, there aren't all trailers required to have a license or a title. If they're on your property indefinitely, you don't have to have a license because you don't take them on the road. If I have a trailer that I have no title to, I have no license to, it's sitting in my yard. Of course, not a problem because I put it in the same lake in and out. But that's the point. Just another hole, another gaping hole.
Mr. Chairman, just really quickly on that. The decal is only required for the transporting. If you're using your trailer to transport, if you're using your trailer on your own personal property, you would not need the decal. Okay, so just a clarification on that.
Representative Anzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Seriously, we really appreciate that you've postponed this again. And we really appreciate the chairman of the committee giving so much time to this issue, because we are hearing a lot about this at home. I'd also go on to say that the resorters in my community, in my area of the state, the top third, would be in crisis mode here in about 90 days had we not taken some steps. So, Mr. Meyer, you and I have worked on lots of problems over the years, nothing as huge as this, however, but I'd ask you to consider empowering citizens on the enforcement side, and if you don't do that, you're looking at adding a considerable number to your conservation officer complement, because this enforcement piece won't happen automatically. And the education piece has to continue, but all these decals and stickers is befuddling to a lot of people. So I urge you to come up with something more creative. But thanks.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anzels, thank you. And just to your comments, Mr. Chair, we do not want to end this session without resolving these issues either. So thank you for bringing this up. And we do want to participate with you and all the stakeholders on resolving this issue. I personally went and met with the two Congress of Minnesota Resorts and Minnesota Resort Campground Association this fall and discussed with them personally this issue. I need to sit down and work with them and also all of you and the citizens of the state to come up with something that works.
Well, Commissioner, and I hope that's what's going to happen, is we have to come up with something else that's going to work. I think you've heard a number of different issues here, why the legislation that we have in place, the law we have in place, isn't going to work. I think we heard that here today. Something else has to be done. Much like the 2011 legislation that we had, it wasn't going to work. So we came forward with something else. This isn't working either. And we haven't come up with a good plan to even replace this yet. So I don't want to leave this legislature with this law in place. That's why we're here today. I think I mentioned that earlier. Let's come up with some alternative. If the focus is going to be on education, let's focus that in that direction. I think folks are more upset about the $5 fee, more than anything. I have to pay another $5 fee when I'm also already paying a $5 fee in my boat registration. Every time I get a new boat registration, I'm paying this extra fee for AIS. Okay, that should be handled that way. Whatever you want for AIS, if it's education or whatever it might be, I'm paying already. So if this education program needs to be something that we think boaters should have, let's do the education program, but we have an account to deal with that. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, something you just mentioned about with the information being on the stickers, identifying who it is and who, and that the person running this program is going to be sending this information out. And something caused the hair in my back of my head to stand up, back of my neck to stand up. I'm on the Civil Law Committee, and we have a lot of issues with data privacy. This information is basically motor vehicle information, which is protected. I have not seen the contract you have with this vendor, but is there anything in that contract to make sure that he stays under the Chapter 13 statutes to make sure this all this data is protected?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we're very cognizant of the, I believe it's 14 permissible uses of driver's license data, and making sure that we do not violate that. So that issue is being dealt with. I can't tell you exactly how right now, but I know we've had conversations about that. And actually, our ELS system was decoupled from the DPS system because of that law, those federal laws that are out there. So data privacy is one of our main concerns. At the DNR, we take those laws very seriously, so yes. Mr. Chairman, just really quickly on your points about the $5 fee. That is there, but it's not funding. It's not generating enough money for us to do all of our AIS activities right now. Currently, we're subsidizing the aquatic invasive species account with $750,000 from the boat registration or the water rec account every fiscal year. Governor's budget does have a proposal to raise that $5 to $10 to help meet that requirement, so we aren't subsidizing from boat registrations into the AIS account. So I just want to put that on the record as since you brought that up, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Meyer, were you in the committee this morning when I asked the question, is there money in the account now? And we had an answer for that.
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, I was in a different meeting. I apologize.
Okay. Apparently, there's money in the account right now, and wherever the money came from, whether it was from being subsidized or from the $5, there's money in the account right now.
In the
AIS account. That question was specifically asked this morning in Representative McNamara's committee.
We could provide you fund details on it.
Representative Lewick, please be brief. We have other issues to get to.
Yes, and this is just in the interest of making sure that a lot of people are taking notes on ideas. And one of the things that struck me, where I live, there's a huge amount of wild rice harvested in the lakes. And the way we do that is boats in the back of pickups and boats on top of racks on the pickups. So that's another thing we just need to take note of, that from lake to lake, you just follow the harvest. And literally none of those rice boats are rarely trailered. They're typically stacked on pickups. So it's just another note of things that big pile of things that we've got to deal with.
Representative Dill, would you like to move your amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like the latitude to not move the amendment, because after I've listened to all of this discussion, and the amendment is not my amendment. It came to me from another source, and I won't even say who it came from. So I'd just like to have a few moments after this long discussion.
Absolutely. You have the floor, Representative.
Thank you. The amendment that's before you, if you read it and you've listened to the discussion or you read it before you came to the committee, you know it doesn't work because it's got 175 plus holes in it that I've counted since I've been at this table. I mean, this, what we have is a resort industry in crisis right now. All right, so I've attended myself representing my business, which isn't even in the United States, the Milwaukee Pheasant Run, Green Bay, St. Paul, and Stevens Point Sports Shows, soon to go to La Crosse and Duluth. I should be taking a dollar for every time someone from another state comes up to me and asks me what's going on, rather than I'm not collecting the reservations because I'm busy explaining or trying to explain this all over the country at this point. I love the word collaboration because I was in committee, the same one as Representative Johnson, in the where Explore Minnesota came before us, Director Edmund. And I asked him the very specific question, did the department collaborate with you on the issue of having boats going through the state having to have the sticker? No. I asked Mr. Forrester if they'd collaborated with him representing over 10,000 property owners. The answer was no. I mean, I think that makes it, that's the point. This does not work. This reminds me of road funding that we are about to take up if we're not already in this state. 80% of the people believe that we got a problem. Probably higher on AIS. Maybe a higher percentage. But only 20% of the people want to really address it, just like the funding for roads. We need to address this. There's 175,000 visitors that go on the Boundary Waters, based on two per canoe, and I'll give you that not all are paddled by two. That means 67,500 boats go through multiple lakes, come out of the Boundary Waters, and go somewhere else in the state. They're on the roof of a car. I mean, this is a problem that may be literally insurmountable in terms of some kind of a program that fits. I could go through a whole litany of things, but you've done such a good job at this. So I am going to, I'm not so sure that I agree totally with Representative Drazowski said, particularly at the end of his statement about infringing on our personal liberties and all this, because frankly, my personal liberties are that I want to see the water in my lake clean and rid of or not getting in those things. And I'll tell you how the National Park Service has handled it, folks. There are four lakes on the there are five lakes that you cannot land a float plane in. There are five lakes in Minnesota in the national park that you cannot take a boat of your own in, even a canoe. So, I mean, the idea that we aren't quarantining areas in this state is not true. It's already being done. So with that, I am going to support the repeal. I'm not offering the amendment because the amendment that I have just causes more problems. And that is the reason I'll vote for this. And I'm hoping that when this bill goes to Representative McNamara, that people of better minds than myself can come together and try and figure out what to do in the future. And I hate to kick the can down the road, but that's where, how I'll be. And thank you for listening.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Members, I do have a suggestion, and it's just one suggestion of maybe many. And the vendor is probably owed some money for what he's done to this point. And there's money in the AIS account, and when we do the new budget, there'll be more money in the AIS account. I think that we can pay this vendor whatever it is that his costs are. Or we can work with the vendor and say we are going to do this program, but pay him for the program, and then the DNR can maybe offer the online course, something along those lines. But let's get out of this now. Let's repeal this law, take care of paying the vendor for his cost to this point. Don't charge a fee for people to get the sticker. Somehow include it with buying your boat license or something like that, where you're already paying the $5 fee for the AIS. But people are sick and tired of these kinds of things coming forward, paying $5 again for more AIS issues when I'm paying $5 on the boat. That's what I continually hear over and over and over again. That's the number one complaint. Not that they don't want to do the right thing, not that they don't want to learn about what's going on, but they're sick and tired. They think they're paying the money to the DNR just because the DNR wants more money. That's what people think. That's the perception out there.
And that's why you have so many residents that are upset about this, let alone the resorts and people that know better. But so let's work through this. It doesn't need to be a fee. Let's take care of the cost and move on. But this thing has to go away, and I think the people out there, the people that we've worked for, the people that elected us, the people that run our government want this to go away. Representative Hertog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to say that was very well said, but the concern that I share with you is that if a program like this were going to be developed, I think it would be more supported by constituents and people all around the state if they actually thought that the money that they're paying was going to go to actually combat invasive species. But under the structure of this particular program, and these stickers are only good for a period of time, after the software and the developing the program has been set up, this is going to be a constant renewal revenue stream for a private company that is keeping the revenue, and it's not going to AIS. As Representative Anzelk and I both sit on education finance, we were, I think, both a little shocked or raised our eyebrows to find out that another vendor is getting $20 million a year to manage testing and test results, basically for different information. And in our state, with 34% of all trades and professions requiring continuing education, we have another vendor, perhaps the same one that I just previously mentioned, that manages these courses and has a portal that you have to report to the state to make sure that you're taking the courses that they sell. It's become really quite an onerous thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Representative Dill.
I'd like to know before the next time, the next stop, I happen to serve on that committee in finance. I assume this bill is going to represent the McNamara's committee. What further contract, if we decided to just eliminate this at this point and shelve the software or whatever was developed to manage this program, what further contractual obligations do we have to that vendor? Are we setting ourselves up for some kind of an action that he may take against, that individual or company may take against us, because we haven't, they maybe have designed this with the expectation of getting $5 a piece times 200,000 people. I don't know. No one seems to be. I want to know that before we get to, or when we get to Representative McNamara's committee.
Well, Representative Dill, that is true. I mean, it'd be $5 per however many that they're going to do the first year, but it is ongoing. And if you add that all up, that's a considerable amount of money. And whether it was legally authorized or not, that's another question. We do have a copy of the contract, but whether they were actually had the authorization to allow to let that contract is another issue as well. So Representative Russo, you had something before we vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the discussion we've had today, because you know there's actually quite a number of legitimate technical issues that have been raised here. I personally, we have 5 boats and a 6th one that's at our house. One of them isn't licensed yet because we just picked it up on Monday. None of them has ever been on a trailer because they're canoes and sailboats and a cute little Swedish pram we just picked up from Urban Boat Builders. But you know, the float planes, we were just talking about minnow buckets, you know, there's quite a lot of things, and I think we really need to get a group, get their heads together and thrash this out better. Thank you.
Representative Considine, final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've heard all the testimony, and obviously there's some major problems with this. My problem is we don't seem to have a game plan going forward. And I would feel a lot more comfortable about repealing this if I knew what we were going to do. And I'm not hearing that at this point. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner, any final words?
Mr. Chairman, just to go back to something Representative Dill talked about with collaboration, we did work with folks. We meet with Explore Minnesota Tourism on a daily basis sometimes, talking about the fishing opener, all these governor's openers events. We work with all the stakeholders, and we work with the legislature. I didn't pass this bill. I'm not the king here. I mean, people give the DNR credit when the credit's not due. We worked with the legislature, but ultimately, we had the idea. We presented the legislature. The legislature involved it, supported it, passed the law. We do want to work with you to pass something again, so I do look forward to that collaboration and trying to resolve this issue.
Okay. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Great discussion. And, Mr. Chair, I think I heard the DNR say that they don't like the law either. I don't know. Maybe I'm not characterizing what Mr. Meyer said, but that's what I thought I heard. I think it's this horse has been thrashed throughout this discussion, and we've really, I think, covered some good points, and Representative Yaruso pointed that out well. I think, like you, Mr. Chair, that if we don't repeal this, and we've identified that this is the wrong solution, it will stay in law, and the DNR will be compelled, according to law, to carry out the wrong law. And so for that reason, I think the step we need to go through is to repeal this and then come up with a solution that works. And I actually like, just as an editorial, what Representative Metza talked about, maybe doing a better and very visible posting at the infected lakes boat ramps and then combining that with some sort of tip-related approach where it's very made very evident to people and there's peer pressure that goes to work. I don't know that we can design the perfect solution from centrally. So anyway, thank you for hearing the bill and appreciate your support on the bill. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, just really quickly, I can give you our word that we will not turn this system on until it's fixed. So,
but Commissioner, stop you right there. When we go home, we're gone. We have no way of dealing with this after we leave here. We need to deal with this now.
Well, I agree.
Okay, we've got the folks. We really want to get rolling on this. Representative Metza. Representative Metza passes. Representative Dale.
Well, just on the Explore Minnesota, I know you work with him on the governor's fishing hope. That makes sense, right? But I asked him specifically of the director if you worked with them on this, and the answer was no. And, I mean, that's just part of the problem. And, I mean, I get that you go in Lake Vermilion fishing, and I hope that you and I can go tit for tat this summer in a boat myself like we have in the past. And believe me, it's lively.
We do have, Mr. Chair, we have had conversations with them. We can copy.
They said no.
Well, it's been a great discussion, folks. The chair renews his motion that House File 184 be referred to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed. Motion prevails. The bill is re-referred to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance. Members, also, I just want to state, if you have a bill before this committee, we are not going to hear any bills. We might not hear your bill anyway, but you at least have to have a hearing request into the committee. So if you have a bill before the committee, turn in a hearing request if you want it heard. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.